Welcome to the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin, your source for real estate investment jewels of wisdom.
Welcome to the REI Diamond Show with Kevin Bupp on Mobile Home Park Investing. Dan Breslin here, REI Diamond Show host. Today I bring you Kevin Bupp, originally from Pennsylvania, like me, but now currently living in Tampa, Florida, where I happen to be buying and selling deals. Kevin has developed a system for buying, stabilizing, and owning mobile home parks, resulting in strong long-term cash flow while also creating millions of dollars in additional value from his purchase prices. Kevin and I discuss his first deal to how he has now developed a pipeline of these deals throughout the United States. So let's get right to it, shall we? Welcome to the show, Kevin.
Dan, thanks for having me. Looking forward to it.
Absolutely. Appreciate you, blocking out the distractions for the next hour or so while we dig into what has made you successful. So for those listeners of the show who may not know who you are already, you want to give a brief introduction about how you maybe got started in real estate, what your business looks like today, and how you got there?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to do that. I am 38 today, and I've been involved in real estate since the age of 19. So I've been basically, call it a full-time real estate investor my entire adult life. Never had a real job, so I'm pretty proud to say that.
Nice.
I got started. It's pretty cool to say. In fact, I don't think I'd be able to function in a normal corporate setting. I think I would fall apart at the seams. I was a horrible student in high school, and so I had a lot of friends that went away to college, and I barely graduated high school. So instead of wasting my parents' money by going off partying, I just went to the local community college in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, where I grew up, and didn't really even have a desire to do that. I just figured that's what I was supposed to do. And so did that, intended bar part-time, and I guess was doing fine in my own mind. I was doing fine, didn't really have any goals or dreams at that point, just was kind of working my way day to day. And I got really lucky. I really am. I'm so grateful for this individual that came into my life because I wasn't really looking for him. And got lucky at the age of 19 where I was introduced to real estate by basically my girlfriend at the time. Her mother was dating a guy. He's like 20 years older than I was. And just I met him at their house one day and found out what he did. And long story short, he was a local real estate investor, owned a bunch of single family and small multifamily properties. He was all about cash flow and he didn't have a real job either. And I thought that was pretty cool that he'd be able to build this business and own property. And so long story short, he must have seen something somewhat, he must have seen like a struggling 19-year-old at that point in time. And he befriended me, invited me to a 3-day boot camp down in Philadelphia where they would teach us how to fix and flip homes, which is basically one of the parts of his business that he was in. And he was like, my business partner's not coming. Why don't you come? If you would like to join and see what I'm doing, maybe it's something you'd have an interest in. And so that was really my first introduction to real estate. And I left that seminar, that boot camp. I was like, if these guys can do it, I can do it. I didn't know what that meant yet, but if there's some of the people I met at that conference, I was like, if these guys can make money doing this, I'm sure I can do this as well. And so I essentially followed David, who was my mentor. I followed him around for a year. I did everything that he did. I sat in his home office when I wasn't working or at school or bartending and followed him to meetings, went to on-site rehabs with him, dealt with, tenants, dealt with brokers, dealt with contractors, did everything for like a year and bought my first property, shortly after that. And that was my first foray into real estate. Bought a really low-end, single-family home in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, a really rough area. Bought a few more of those. Don't know why, because the first one was enough of a challenge. But I made money. I made money on them, and I caught the bug, I guess you could say. And so fast forward a couple of years, I moved down to Tampa, Florida. I was 22 years old and continued my path of acceleration down here. The market was just kind of starting to take off at that point in time. Dove in and started buying homes in a big way and started a mortgage company simultaneously. Leading up to 2006, 2007, owned just under 400 apartment doors, 122 single family homes, and had been doing quite well. Then the market crashed. So a lot of that went away. I lost a lot of it. We were kind of ground zero for the real estate crash and took a few years off of real estate, started a few other businesses, and then dove back into real estate knowing that I didn't really want to focus on single family homes. And I know that's what you do, Dan. So I'm not going to talk down to him. I knew that I needed to rebuild quickly. And it took me so long to build those 122 rental homes, like to buy them and manage them it was very challenging to manage that many over a few county spread. And so I knew I was going to buy multifamily and I just got luckily introduced to some guy that was in the mobile home park space. And so that was my introduction to mobile home parks. That was like 6 years ago. And that's all I've done since that point in time moving forward. I mean, I've bought a few other random properties here and there, commercial properties, but 99% of our focus has been mobile home parks. And like I said, to date, we own just over 1,000 lots, and I've got a few other 100 under contract right now, and we buy for long-term cash flow. We're cash flow guys. I mean, we invest for long term. We don't buy, fix, and flip. Essentially, we're buying individual businesses, and we're maintaining them for a number of years and living off the cash flow. So I'm a full-time mobile home park investor nowadays.
So it sounds like you, like, politely stayed away from the single-family thing. So what was it that caused you to view mobile home parks at that point? And you said, oh, yeah, this is, you know, did it happen all at once in the first deal that you knew you were committed to mobile home parks from that point? Or did you kind of like step into one, try it out, and then discover that it was a great business there and then continue to build to the 1,000 pads that you have currently?
And I want to answer that question, but I want to give a, I just want to clarify. I don't speak down to single family homes because I, you know, I think that single family homes can make a great investment for the right investor, right? It's just what I found is that after a certain point in time, they weren't right for me anymore and where I wanted to go with my business and I guess the number of units I wanted to get owner under ownership. And so that's all I know, because then that's your business. I've got a lot of friends that own single family homes. They do very, very well. So I just want to make sure that I'm not talking down to the single family homes, because you can make money in any type of real estate. You just have to pick what works best for you, right? And focus on what works best for you. And for us, it's mobile home parks today. So, you know, what had happened, Dan, I went to this lunch with this mutual friend. Well, he wasn't a friend of mine, but he was introduced to me by a good friend of mine. Went to lunch with him, talk about mobile home parks. I was just kind of in an exploratory stage of my life at that point, 2011 era. And I hadn't bought any properties, and I was knew I was going to start buying some. And I just thought, you know, I'll go to lunch with this guy and I'll talk to him about mobile home parks and I'll see what he has to say. I didn't really have an interest going into that lunch or think that I was going to walk out at lunch saying, I'm going to focus on mobile home parks. And he just piqued my interest with many different things that relate to mobile home parks and how they're a very unique asset. And just a few things off the top of my head are, number one, you know, apples to apples, you could typically expect 2 to 3 point return premium over, like, the, you know, comparably speaking mobile apartment building in the same market. So, like, the returns are much higher. It's the only real estate asset class that has a diminishing supply, and meaning that they're not building them anymore. In fact, they're going away faster than they're being built. And so there's a very unique barrier to entry there. And they've got a bad stereotype. They've got a bad stigma to them in lots of areas. And so municipalities don't want them built. And so you can't even, if you wanted to build one, you wouldn't be able to get approval to build one. And so there's a very unique barrier to entry there. Like, I can buy a park in a great market and don't have to worry about a developer coming in and buying up to 10 acres down the road and putting in a second mobile home park and being a competitor to me. And just one other really big thing, there's multiple things, but one other big thing that really attracted me or piqued my interest was that the turnover rate's very low in comparison to apartments or any other type of rental housing unit, because it's very expensive to move these homes. And so $3,000 to $4,000 to move the single wide and another couple thousand to set it back up in another park, people don't move. They don't move these, even though they're mobile homes, they don't move that often. It's very expensive. Not many people in our parks have $5,000 sitting around to move a home. And so our turnover rate is very, very low in comparison to apartment buildings. So when I left that lunch meeting, Dan, I literally walked out there and said, you know what? I'm going to devote the next year to learning all I can about mobile home parks, and I'm going to buy a park and see what happens. That's kind of what it was like my test. And it took me just about a year to buy the first park. It did take me a while, but so I went out and I got educated as much as I could. I talked to as many other park owners as possible, tried to find out the gotchas that are involved in that business, find out where I need to be staying away from, where I need to be focusing my energies on. And we bought a park in the Atlanta area, and that was, you know, however, 5 years ago, and that's still a park we own today. And moving forward, we bought many more. And like I said, that's pretty much all we purchased since that point in time. I haven't bought any apartment buildings or anything else. So
what would be the definition of a good deal? Like, what is the criteria for a park that fits? Are you looking at some demographic things or age of the units, occupancy? What defines, like, oh, this is a sweet gem and we really got to look into this?
Well, everything starts with demographics first, right? I mean, we're really all about the market first and foremost. I could care less about parks that are opportunities that are in that market. I want to know about the market first, because an opportunity or a property is nothing if the market stinks, right? And so we look at the markets first, and we want to know that there's job growth. We want to know that there's under an 8% employment rate. We want to know that the median house price is at least $100,000 or higher. I want to know that median rents for apartments are $800-$900 or higher a month. And I want to know that there's a demand for affordable housing, meaning that there's not, you know, an oversupply of either mobile home parks that are sitting there vacant or low-end apartment buildings that are sitting there with vacancy issues in that market. So that's first and foremost. And once we've determined that there's a demand in a particular marketplace, now we start looking at the deal specifically. And for us, you know, there's a certain, we don't buy like rundown war zones. I mean, we've turned some rundown parks that are in good areas. We turn them back around, but we won't buy like drug ridden, you know, just, you know, rough things that are on the wrong side of the tracks. We like buying things that are in distress, but that are in really good neighborhoods. You know, we'll go in and turn them around and kick out the bad, bring in the good. And then, but we're really, what we're looking for, Dan, is we're looking at the cash on cash return. Like, we're cash flow investors. And so really, I want to know, what kind of return am I going to get on my money? Because that's spend on money each and every year. Like, what is my annual cash on cash return going to be, conservatively speaking, in this park? And so we want to know that when we buy a park, that within the first year, or by month 12 or month 13, that park is performing at a 20% or higher annualized cash on cash return. So that's kind of like our target that we're looking to strike, is that 20% range. And we might not be buying it at a 20% when we go in, but we know that we can very easily fix problems that are in that park and easily basically climb that mountain to get to 20% and cross over the other side.
So, Kevin, when you typically buy one of these, first, what would be the rent? Let's say we have, the demographics are in our favor. We have an $850 average rent for apartments. What kind of rent would you expect, I don't know, on the lot, on the house itself? What would be that?
Yeah, rate? That's a good question, Dan. And it's such a fragmented industry that, unfortunately, it's getting more standardized as we go, like in some of the bigger markets. But I think the general thumb that some people in the industry use, and I don't necessarily use it because every market is very unique, but some of the rules of thumb they use is like, we'll look at whatever the average rent is for like a studio apartment in a particular marketplace. And then we would say, okay, well, the lot rent of that park, you know, the market, we should be able to at least expect half of whatever the median. So if the median rent for a studio apartment was $700, we should expect that we should be able to get $350 for a lot rent in a mobile home park. And it doesn't hold true all the time. There's lots of markets to where they're just behind the times. They've been very fragmented. They've been owned by mom and pops for too long in a particular market. And so no one's really raised rents at a steady rate. But that's the general rule of thumb that you can use. And then, as far as like some of the parks that we own some of the trailers in them. And so they're rental units. That's not our preference, but we do own some. And most of them are like 3-bedroom, 2-bath homes. And I would say that the average rent that, if we were looking at like the market itself, that 3-bedroom, 2-bath mobile home, we would get probably in between whatever the average price is for a 1- and 2-bedroom, you know, like C-plus grade apartment in the area. That's kind of what we would expect for a monthly rental amount, which is our competition. So for us, when we analyze the park, that's what we're looking at. Like, can we pull someone from a C-class apartment building and show them the option for home ownership and show them how they can live their family and have more space for, you know, $100 less or $200 less a month? We get a lot of people that move into our communities that have lived in lower-end apartment buildings. That's where a lot of our interest comes from, so.
So let's talk about like a tenant, right? It could be a real tenant or just an avatar that we use for the sake of conversation here. But that person who's moving out of that lower end apartment and then they're going to move into your park. I mean, how does that tenant, right? Because you're renting just a lot. How do they finance? Do they already have a mobile home? Is that something you guys provide? I know that's not your main model. But, you know, what's the process for that tenant? Because one of the reasons that single family houses work so well, especially for anybody just getting into the business or who's been in the business a long time, is that a house is a relatively liquid, easy to fill asset compared to something like a commercial property storefront where it may sit vacant for 2 years. A single family home, you know, in most markets, you could fill a home in a month, 2 months, depending on the time of year. So what does that look like when you get into the mobile home, when a tenant, you know, could you just run through that so we could kind of
Absolutely.
That works?
So, like I said, some of the parks that we buy, they come with, like when we buy the entire park, maybe there's some rental trailers that come along with the sale, meaning like we're acquiring some of the actual units. And in that scenario, like our goal, whenever we buy a park like that, our goal is to convert it over a period of time and eliminate the rentals and convert them to homeowners. You know, find people that actually want to own the home and just pay lot rent. And so sometimes it means that we just non-renew leases for those that don't have an interest in actually owning. They just want to rent. And so we'll have vacant units that come up in parks. We'll renovate those. And then we'll offer those for sale on very attractive, like rent-to-own terms, like a lease option for someone that's coming into the park that's looking for a place to buy, a place to live. We'll sell them for cheap, you know, cash prices, you know, really bargain basement cash prices if someone wants to buy it outright. And so that's one way. That's pretty common in a lot of our parks. Most of the parks we buy have some homes that come with them, and so we convert those. But then some of the parks we also buy also have vacant lots, meaning like there's no trailer there whatsoever, And so it's not very common. I wouldn't say it's very common that like someone moving from an apartment building is going to go buy their own trailer and then move it in. It does happen, but it's few and far between. The more common scenario with how we capitalize on that vacant lot and how we get a home there is we're set up with a few different home programs through a few of the big manufacturers to where we get brand new homes. We'll bring in a brand new single wide home or a double wide, but most of the time a single wide. We'll bring it in, we'll set it up, and then we've got some third party financing sources that will basically finance those that have, even if they have, you know, somewhat dinged credit, they'll give them financing and still a very attractive total monthly payment. Like the combined monthly payment between their lot rent and a brand new home. Like for instance, we've got a, I'll give you an example of one of our parks, kind of average in terms of what the lot rent is, but we've got brand new 3-bedroom, 2-bath, brand new, never lived in. It's like 1,100 square feet, total living square footage. With the lot rent, principal, interest, taxes, insurance, someone that's got some ding credit, they'd be looking at a total monthly payment of like $625 a month. And they would, and it's a 15-year amortization. So we'll do that. If we've got empty spaces in the park, we'll bring new homes in and we'll sell them off with a outside finance program.
So they're paying $625 a month for this 3-bed, 2-bath mobile. And then in addition to that, they're going to cover the $250, $350, whatever
the
lot rent is, correct?
No. That was actually inclusive of the lot rent. That number included the lot rent. Yeah, the number I gave you was an example of like our average 3-bedroom, 2-bath home we're buying nowadays, like a brand new one, we're getting them for about $22,000. And then it takes about another $8,000 to set them up and get them, you know, putting air conditioning and, you know, skirting and just get them ready to move in. So we're into them for about $30,000, and that's, we typically just sell them for what we're into them at. We don't try to make a profit on the sale. And so, no, that number I gave was basically a 15-year amortization on like a $30,000 loan at, you know, 8 or 9% interest, and then factoring in the taxes, insurance, as well as the lot rent, you know, lot rent of about $250. Yeah. So you can't really beat it, man. There's a huge demand. Like I said, we only buy parks in areas that have a big demand for affordable housing. And so like that home I just gave you, that actual example I gave you, that was a park that we own right outside of Huntsville, Alabama, where the average 3-bedroom, 2-bath single family home rents for $1,200 a month. You know, that's 1,400 square feet. So
they're half that amount.
Exactly. And it's a way to fill these things in very quick. So it adds revenue to our bottom line because now we're basically filling these lots in. And we're offering, obviously, a product that's in demand to those that want an affordable place to live.
So let's pick apart, if we could, the Atlanta deal, your very first mobile home park deal, number of lots, price on entry, you know, the strategy for turning around if any turnaround was necessary, and kind of what that deal looks like now and perhaps maybe your exit strategy if you already exited or at some point in the future.
Yeah, and we probably wouldn't buy that deal today. It doesn't fit our business model anymore, but it's a great example because I think that it's a deal. It was at a price point that a lot of your listeners could probably, if it was just their first deal, they could probably figure out how to get the deal done based on what we paid for and what we put into it. So it was a 35-space mobile home park. Had been owned by the previous owner, I don't know the whole story, but for a number of years, and he had improved it over the years, but he never did a good job in improving the tenant base. And so it was really a sour subject with the city it was in. The mayor, it was right across the street from the mayor's office and the chief of police's office. And so they had to see it every day. They had to drive past it. It was a drain on their resources. I mean, they hated this place with a passion. The guy that owned it basically overleveraged it back in, 2008, took like $1.6 million of debt, put a whole bunch of brand new homes in it. And then he defaulted on it a short time later. Bank took it back. Banks don't do a good job of managing properties when they're in receivership or, you know, the receivers don't do a great job of managing these things. And so over a period of like 2 to 3 years, this thing sat there vacant, it slowly became vacant. You know, the tenants weren't paying. No one really cared. People were stealing AC units. People were squatting in the homes. I mean, just messy situation. So we bought this thing. Had 3 residents living in the park, and we acquired all the homes in this park.
Cool.
So all these newer homes that this guy had bought, we acquired. There's 29 that came with it of homes that we acquired. Every single one had the ACs that were cut and stolen, you know, against squatters. There had been water leaks. They didn't turn off the water, and so the winter freeze would happen and be broken pipes, like water fountains inside these units. It was a pretty big rehab, but we kicked out the 3 people that were living there because they hadn't paid rent in like 2 years, and they were just bad elements anyway. And so basically had a completely empty, call it a 29-unit horizontal apartment building. You know, half 3 bedrooms, the other half 2 bedrooms. We just went in and we had like 2 or 3 crews running at a time, renovated, you know, 2 or 3 homes every like 2 or 3 weeks. We would turn 2 or 3 units. It took about a year to get fully stabilized to where we felt like we had a good tenant base in there. Every unit was renovated. It was, you know, we were running smooth. The place was cleaned up. So it took an entire year of getting that place cleaned up and changing your, more so changing your reputation. That was probably the hardest part because everyone knew this place as the place to go pick up dope. And so changing the reputation of, you know, trying to, hey, brand new renovated units. People are like, oh, is that place over there by the railroad tracks? Yeah, like, no, that's bad news. But it took us a year. The mayor hated us at first. He said he was going to shut us down. But then after a year, he wrote us a recommendation letter because he was so happy at the turnaround we did. And to date, we bought it for $200. We put another $200 into it of renovations. So we've got basically $400 tied up into it. And that park today, I can tell you exactly what our tax returns sitting here in front of me from 2016. You know, after all the expenses, you know, not including debt service, but after all the expenses, the NOI on this property was $122,000. Our debt service annually on that park is only like $15,000 a year. So the park makes $100,000 a year net, like net in our pockets, and we've got $400 into it. And it's considerably probably worth. We're actually going through a refinance right now. I don't know if the appraisal is going to come in out, but I'm pretty comfortable saying it's going to come in at probably between like $900,000 to $1 million. Want to refinance.
That right?
Yeah, that was a good deal. That was, I probably wouldn't do that deal again today just because of the manpower. We have a good infrastructure, but we're buying bigger parks and we don't really have the time or energy to buy something that doesn't cash flow for such a long period of time. But that park was just kind of you got to prove the concept, right? Like I tell everyone, like if you're going to get into whatever business you're going to do, if you're going to buy apartments, you're going to buy shopping centers, you're going to buy single family homes, and your plan is to actually go out and like raise capital or bring investors in, you need to prove your concept first. Don't go do it with an investor's money the first time around and run the risk of losing it, right? I mean, prove your concept. It's going to be a much easier sales pitch to bring money in after you say, hey, look, I went and did it. I risked my money. I risked my butt. And now look, it's great. It's going wonderful. I'm going to do it again. You want to be a part of it? So that's exactly what we did on that one. That was kind of our model property to go, you know, basically raise capital and to continue building our business.
Nice. Now, did you use your own, I guess you and your partner or something like that, your own cash to take this one down, or did you?
Yeah, so I still had some relationships from previous investments back prior to the crash. I still had some private money. We did our best to work with any lenders, any banks, and any hard money lenders or private money lenders that we had relationships with. So we didn't just like walk away from our real estate back when the market started turning in 2007, 2008. And so I still had some good relationships from people that have lent us money in the past. And so one of the guys, he basically put up the purchase price, 10% interest, fully amortizing 15-year loan, and we put up all the money in the renovation. So we essentially put up, I had one partner, so we were 50-50, and we each put in $100,000. He loaned us the money for the acquisition. So we still got our money tied up in there, and we're working on a refinance right now to pull it out.
Nice. So, Kevin, you live and did live, what, in the Tampa Bay area?
Yeah, I live in Clearwater, Florida. So this thing was 8 hours away. Yep.
How often during that year while you were stabilizing this were you in the Atlanta, Georgia market?
And prior to the first month, one of us, my partner or I, we'd take turns. That was the nice thing about having a partner in this. We would take turns. We'd go up there for 2 days at a time every week for the first, like, probably 6 weeks we would do that. We hired a manager on site. Once we had a competent manager, it made it a little easier to have eyes and ears there. And so once we found a couple crews that we felt comfortable with, renovation crews, and we knew that we kind of had a game plan moving forward. The manager was there being very helpful. And then we started limiting it. Once we were making progress, we started limiting it to once every other week, we would go up there and spend 2 or 3 days. And so it was a lot. I mean, literally for an entire, like at least 9 or 10 months of that. It was a lot of trips to Atlanta, and we would drive because it's only like a 50-minute flight. But by the time you factor in going to the airport, parking your car, getting on an airplane, flying there, renting a car and driving 45 minutes south, because it's about 30 to 40 minutes south of the airport. You got 8 hours. So I was like, let's just drive, you know, let's just drive up there and get it over with. Like I said, I wouldn't have the bandwidth or capacity to take that project on, but I'm very glad that we did. I mean, it's a big money maker for us and small, but it makes really good money. And our baseline's still low in it. And we're about to get our cash out. We're about to do a complete cash out, get all of our $200,000 back, get a much lower interest rate loan on it. And but we'll be literally into it for nothing at that point. And it will still make tremendous cash flow each and every year.
Nice. So tell me about your favorite mobile home park deal and where it's at. You don't have to go into all the details, just maybe why you like that one.
Yeah, I mean, I got a bunch of them, man, but I'll just give you one real quick. You know, we bought a park up in Richmond, Virginia area. It had been owned by for 33 years by the same guy. Just fixed some very basic problems, ran it like a business, and limited the spending controls and, you know, the ability for the managers that were on site there to outsource all the work that needed done in the park. They should have been doing it themselves. Just put the controls in place. And so we literally added, you know, $125,000 of bottom line revenue to that property in a very, very short period of time. And so we paid $650 for that park. And today we haven't got it formally appraised, but I know the market well enough. I know we could sell it for it'd probably go for about $1.6 million, something like that. So we added $1 million of value to it in a very, very short period of time.
And are you partial to that market? Is there some demographic trends or anything like that that you think like, whoa, this is really a great market for, even if it was single family or other investments?
Yeah, I mean, Richmond's a great market. I mean, it's a growing market. It's got a lot, low unemployment rate. There's, you know, Richmond itself as a city has a lot of incentives for, you know, businesses to move there. I mean, so they're really trying to foster the local small business growth, and it's still reasonably affordable. It's got a pretty neat tech scene there. And so they're really trying to foster and support the growth of smaller businesses and the tech businesses, but it's much more affordable than like a Seattle or San Francisco, or I don't know, there's multiple other, you know, hubs like that that are, you know, tech hubs. But it's a little growing, thriving market. It's got a little hipster scene going on. And so lots of positive energy coming to that area, lots of job growth. And our park is basically a 20-minute direct shot up the highway north into the city. And so Virginia, just in general, I mean, if you wanted to look at Virginia as a whole, at least Eastern Virginia, I mean, once you get Western Virginia, it gets a little bit more affordable, like towards the mountains. But Eastern Virginia as a whole, it's just expensive. It's just an expensive, I don't care where it is, even like areas that you wouldn't see as very desirable, land is just expensive. Property is just expensive. And so in those types of areas, housing costs are high and there's a demand for affordable housing, which is what we do.
Nice. So, you know, over the long haul, like you take a storage facilities and it's like a form of land banking. Is mobile home park investing, you know, the way you had talked earlier on the interview, it's kind of being phased out and the townships don't really like it. And so it's like this dwindling supply, I think, or diminishing supply in the market overall. And you see stories, at least you did see stories a few years back of mobile home parks in Florida being bought up and then redeveloped as single family. Is that something you consider on these deals over, say, a 20-year time horizon? Or do you have like any other exit strategy, or is it just kind of like a buy them, hold them for cash flow?
Well, I mean, we never go into a deal buying it because there might be an exit for a land play after the fact. Like, we're first and foremost cash flow. And so, like, we've got to hit certain returns by buying the property. I would never speculatively buy it because I think they might build a shopping center there 10 years from now. Like, I would never do that. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. It's just not part of our business model. You know, the land banking play, like, that's kind of, I guess it's a backup. Like, it'd be just icing on the cake if the property we're buying had a higher and better use other than a mobile home park at a later date and had a higher value to it because of that, then it'd just be an icing on the cake scenario for us. But really, we're long-term. And so our exit, either we don't exit anytime soon. Like, we really don't have anything we buy. We've got like a 15-year horizon. I mean, not saying we wouldn't sell it because everything's for sale at the right price, but we're really like 10 to 15-year investors in whatever we buy. But really, our end game would be to basically maximize the revenue. If there's empty spaces, fill them in. Basically, you know, occupy these parks to the fullest extent, keep market rates, or keep the rates at market, make sure that we can maximize the revenue, and then exit out to someone. Like, there's lots of buyers out there for mobile home parks that are more institutional buyers, and they're looking for more stabilized assets, looking for high quality stabilized assets. They don't want to go in and do the heavy lifting. They don't want to, you know, turn around a tenant base. They don't want to do that. They want something that is moving forward now, you know, just clean as a whistle, and it's running smoothly. And so that's who we would exit to. Like, most of our assets are of a good enough grade that we would sell off to an institutional buyer if that's what we decided. There is one park that we're actually buying right now. It's in Pennsylvania, and it's three contiguous parcels, and it just happens that the two front contiguous parcels both are all commercial road frontage that tie together. And so it makes like this park and these two commercial road frontage parcels like 24 acres on like this, it's almost a four lighted intersection. Like, there's a very, very small sliver that separates my three contiguous parcels to like this lighted intersection. It's right next to the interstate, right next to the turnpike. It's more of an industrial area right now, but it's changing. And we're not buying it. Like, it makes sense as a mobile home park today. And you know what? If for whatever reason, the higher and better use is a mobile home park down the road, then that's what we'll keep it as. But that one, of anything that we own, would be the one that I could foresee as being some kind of redevelopment play. But again, we're buying it as a mobile home park. The numbers support themselves as a mobile home park, and it'd just be a big high five day. You know, in 15 years, someone comes to us and says, hey, we want to put Walmart distribution here. We want to pay you you know, nice. Whatever, 10 times what you paid for it.
Sold.
Yeah, exactly. Sold. Where do I sign?
Other parcels in the front occupied right now by mobile home lots, those two commercial parcels, or are they vacant?
No, they're actually, one is it used to be a service center a long time ago, and now like a paving company has rented it for the past 12 years. So like, it's just literally like an old service center with like garage doors, but there's like paving equipment out there and like trucks and things like that. So that's the one they rent, and they pay, I don't know, I think like $2,000 a month for rent. And then the other parcel has a couple properties on it. It's got like a small little strip center that's basically had a florist in it, but now it's vacant. I think it's maybe like 3,000 or 4,000 square feet. Yeah, I believe two storefronts, maybe three storefronts. So we'll renovate that and probably be like either used as small office space or maybe even some type of retail. And then next to that, there is a car dealership, like a used car dealership. And on that same lot where the car dealership is a single family home that basically that whole package, the shopping center, the used car dealership, and that single family home is rented to the guy that owns the car dealership, I think for like $2,500 a month or something like that. So all those rents are way below market from what they should be paying. But so we'll probably go in and actually bump rents a little bit on those commercial parcels, do some cleanup, do some renovations. And but yeah, so like they're occupied. The commercial parcels pay for themselves based on what's there now. They'll pay for themselves. They'll support themselves.
So over the past year, have you had a single idea, system, or strategy in your business that you've implemented and seen exponential growth as a result, Kevin?
Yeah, we have. I've got a multiple of them. Let me think. You know, I think one thing we do, Dan, is we do a lot of off-market deals. Most stuff we buy is direct to owner. Like we're going doing direct mail, we're cold calling. That's most of the sources of our deals, our lead flow is direct to owner. And one of the strategies that we've incorporated in our business is a tool called Sly Broadcast, which is, you know, basically direct to voicemail, or I don't know what you call it, but it's basically where we can program a bunch of phone numbers into a computer system or software, and it will literally drop a voicemail onto someone's cell phone, like a pre-recorded voicemail on someone's cell phone. So we do a lot of mailing campaigns, and our database is so big now that it's really hard to do like a follow-up call for every mailer we send out. Like it would take multiple people to do that, and it would still take many days and weeks to accomplish that. And so we now do those follow-up calls with Sly Broadcast. So we program all the numbers in, send out a mailer, wait a couple of weeks, and then drop a voicemail right on their phone. And we've definitely increased our deal flow from that little technique.
Nice. And who is the most successful real estate investor or developer, and why do you believe they're successful?
There's many, right? So everyone's got their different definitions of success. So I'll pick someone, I guess, from the mobile home park space. And, you know, Warren Buffett and both Sam Zeller, they're in the mobile home park space in a very big way. And so, Warren Buffett, just that he's a long-term growth guy, and he's got a long-term look at things as far as, like, what's the demand going to be, not just, like, tomorrow or next year or 5 years from now, but what's it going to be in the next 20 to 30 years? And I really think that plays into mobile home parks. And so I think he's a very smart investor in multiple other business types, but it really lends well to why mobile home parks are a great opportunity, great investment. I think he's very smart. I forget how many lots he owns. He owns a lot, like 30 or 40,000 lots of in mobile home parks. And he's just a very long strategist. And I think our country is, we're technically doing good as an economy right now, but we're really not. And I don't really think people are making more money today than what they were, 7 or 8 years ago. I don't think the unemployment rate is as low as what it is. I can tell you that even though people are supposedly making more money and things are going great, the demand for our product is so high. And I think that obviously we all go through cycles, right? And so supposedly we're like in the best part of the cycle, like we're still going up, up, up. At some point, the roller coaster ride goes down a little bit as well. And mobile home parks thrive in a down market, but they also do really well in an up market. And so I think this his long-term horizon of affordable housing, the demand for it, meaning or knowing that it's not going to go anywhere anytime soon, and knowing that mobile home parks fit a very unique niche or a very unique void in that particular niche, I think that he's very intelligent because of that. So, and multiple other reasons as well, but Warren Buffett would be my guy.
One of the best, if not the best.
One of the best.
A free book.
Yeah, that's a hard question to answer because there's so many people, and there's so many people that have had an impact in my life. So I consider them the best, even though they're not the biggest and wealthiest, but like, I think they're the best because they've helped me. So, yeah, that's a tough question.
Yeah, it's a camouflage question. So part of that is getting you to define your success, your idea of success, and then also kind of like seeing if you attach somebody to it. So it's cool to see the answer that you gave there. Two or three book recommendations you've made most often.
Yeah, I'm going to mention a few that I was just talking about recently, and I've recently reread. Got a pretty big book selection. But, one of them is, Mastering the Rockefeller Habits. It was written by, I think it was like Vernon or Vern Harnish, Harish, something like that. So
yeah,
Mastering the
Harnish,
Rockefeller
yeah.
Habits. Yeah, I always butcher his name. Another one that I probably read like a year and a half ago, and I recently didn't reread the entire thing, but it's not necessarily a real estate base. It's called Riches and Niches. And I'm a big believer in niching down as deep as you can into a particular investment type or strategy. And so like with us, it's mobile home parks. And I feel like people do the best if they focus on one thing and they focus on a particular niche instead of being like trying to be the expert at everything. Like I buy mobile home parks, but also buy apartment buildings and self storage and single family homes. Like, no, we buy mobile home parks. Not that I wouldn't buy something else, but like that is 99.9% of our focus. Like we drill down into it very, very deep and our goal is to master it. So that's a great book that speaks very deeply to niching into something and how there's a lot of riches in niches. And then a third one I read recently that's an old book, and I can't think of the guy's name, that the author, but it's called The Making of a Blockbuster. And it's Wayne, I can never pronounce his last name right as well, but he was basically the founder of Blockbuster. And he was also the one that took, the National Garbage Company, Waste Management. He basically did a roll-up strategy of Waste Management, and he did the same thing with Blockbuster Video. So back in the day, before there was Blockbuster, there was a bunch of mom-and-pop run video shops, like in all these towns all across America. And he's the one that went in and did a roll-up strategy, saw like fragmented market and rolled up all these individual mom-and-pop video shops and, you know, built the behemoth Blockbuster. He did the same thing with Waste Management. He went through and started acquiring all these mom-and-pop garbage companies in all these different areas across the country and collectively rolled them into a large company, which we know as Waste Management Services. So that's a great book. It's written a while ago, probably like 12, 15 years ago, but it's called The Making of a Blockbuster. And it's basically his autobiography.
Yeah,
those are three, I think.
That last name either.
Yeah, are you looking it up right now as I'm saying? I don't know.
Yeah.
I've heard it.
It starts with an H, so if you check on Amazon,
yeah,
you'll find it under there.
Yeah, it's H-U-I-Z-E-N-G-A, in case you want to look it up.
Kevin, if you could share the crown jewel of wisdom with your 18-year-old self, what would that be?
I had a lot of fear, and when I was getting into this business, even though I had a mentor, I had someone kind of take me underneath their wings, but everything was new to me. And I would say that just know that fear is natural. And as you begin to better master your skill, whatever that is, you start to classify fear differently. Like, you know, for successful people, they call fear stress. And I'd say just know that it's a natural part of the progression of things and that the fear will dissipate. I mean, it will like morph into something completely different. So just know that it's there, know it's going to be there. And just know that if you keep pushing forward and you're persistent with whatever road you're taking to get to the end goal, that you'll push past that fear, and that fear would just be something in the past. You'll always be some type of fear there, but just know that it's not necessarily an easy mountain to climb, but it's a mountain that can be climbed and you can definitely make it to the other side. Just don't stop. Don't let the fear stop you. I mean, even like public speaking, for example, I've been doing a podcast for 3.5 years. That's not even public speaking. That's I'm hiding behind a microphone, right? But even then, I remember when I first did my first couple of interviews, maybe you feel the same way, but for me, it was a big deal. Like I was nervous. And I'm like, I was like joking with myself. Like, why am I nervous? I know what I'm talking about. I know who I'm talking to. Why am I nervous to speak with them about this? And so I was like, you know what? This feeling is going to be here. These butterflies I have or this nervousness, but if I just keep doing it and just try to ignore the fear, it will go away at some point in time. So I just say, get out there and take action and just keep pushing forward is the best advice I'd give.
Yeah, that's a great one. I remember, you know, a lot of things that cause stress in the beginning with the deals, and you do them a couple times and then everything goes okay and it no longer stresses you out. And that's a really cool thing about linking up with mentors and people who've kind of been through whatever it is you're trying to do. They can a lot of times like talk you through it quickly and dissipate a lot of that stress as well. So yeah, well said.
All the benefit that comes through, like pushing through whatever that fear was, like whatever like goal you're looking to achieve, like the benefits will definitely outweigh any of the negatives that were associated with that fear that you had or that you experienced. You won't even remember like what you were worried about in the first place. It would just be, it'd be wiped from your mind.
Yeah. So if anybody's listening and they want to find out more information about you, would you like to share some contact information or a website where people can check you out?
Yeah, there's two different places really they can find me, and they can obviously find me at either one. It doesn't matter. But my main website is kevinbupp.com, and that's where I host my Real Estate Investing for Cashflow podcast. That's got a little bit of the story of me and my background, as well as the podcast, you know, which is a commercial real estate podcast. And then the mobile home park specific side of me and my business is mobilehomeparkacademy.com. On there, they can listen to our Mobile Home Park podcast, which is also a weekly show where we just focus on the topic of mobile home park investing, and they can read about what it is we do, how we do it, and just learn a lot about the business. So either one of those two will make its way back to me. And my personal email is kevin@kevinbupp.com. Very easy. And so anyone could reach out to me in any three methods, and they'll find me one way or another.
Well, Kevin, I really appreciate you taking the time out of your day. I know you're busy to share this wisdom with our audience here. Appreciate you coming on the show.
Dan, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the REI Diamond Show. Are you interested in receiving a notification when I release the next episode? You can either sign up for the email blast at www.reidiamonds.com for the Saturday new episode notification email and a bunch of cool bonuses, or subscribe through one of the podcasting apps, including iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. If you are interested in selling a deal to me, please visit my site, www.reidiamonds.com, and click the link at the top of the page. I am currently looking for and buying deals that includes houses, commercial properties, even vacant land in the Philadelphia tri-state area, the Baltimore, Maryland, D.C. market, the Chicagoland region, and the Atlanta region, and also the Tampa Bay area in Florida. Finally, do you know anyone else who might also enjoy this episode? I'd appreciate the referrals, and I'm sure they would too. Last but not least, I appreciate you to my loyal REI Diamond Show listener. Dan Breslin here. I will catch you on the next episode.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin. To receive email notifications of new weekly episodes, sign up at www.reidiamonds.com.